Welcome to the 40K Lorecast.
Welcome, 40K Lorecast, with me, John Barsotti, and Brad Chester.
This guy.
All right, Brad. Here we go. This is the final battle. This of Horus Heresy is upon us. This is the ultimate culmination. So let's recap real quick to set the stage for anyone who didn't want to binge.
All I'm saying is, before we recap, I have to talk about the stuff that we talked about off air, which is me being so excited. I'm running around John's house like a Def Comedy Jam person, and John trying to reel me in, going, "Brad, you have to stay on target." And I go, "Absolutely not, John." Yeah. I am so excited about the Siege of Terra and invading the Sol system that I guarantee that we are going off the rails because so much stuff happens right now. I
mean, we're going to dive hard. We are just starting this recording now. I have no idea if this is going to be one episode or seven.
This is literally what got me into 40K. Mm-hmm. Seriously. Back in 99, I was reading the Chaos books. And I just got super excited about everything that goes into this civil war between two rival factions that both think they're ridiculously right and are both ridiculously wrong. And I love everything about it, and I'm excited to talk about it.
So let's just do a quick recap for those who decide to start on this episode. Hey, you know what? We've talked a lot. Maybe it's all they care about. So good for you all. So there were 18 legions within the Space Marine Legions because two of them were redacted. 50%, nine of them have turned traitor and have all in one way or another fallen within the influence of chaos. Although I wrote the note, Iron Warriors, maybe not. So maybe not all but one.
Alpha Legion?
Oh, yeah. Okay, fine. Fair enough. Okay. Recap. Nine of the 18 legions have turned traitor. Seven of those nine
are for sure part of chaos.
The other two,
but TBD. Also let's do a recap on where everybody is, because the traitor legions are. Oh, what are they infused with, real quick, John?
Chaos.
Weirdly enough, again, not the forces of law and planning. So they are kind of following the plan, not
so long as it exclusively benefits them.
Yeah, and they are also already infighting and trying to be a little bit better than their brothers. And then you have the loyalists, who are in the worst position possible because they are mostly scattered to the winds. There is chaos warp storms, which are stopping travel right now, which are making it very, very difficult to get back to Terra. And we'll do a whole podcast about some of the stuff that's going on with that. Yeah. But what we've got is loyalists all over the place. Some of the legions have gotten back to Terra and are ready to defend. And we've also got a lot of legions on the way.
Yep.
Horus also knows that there are legions on the way and also knows that they're being actively disrupted. So he knows he has a limited time frame before they have maximum threats.
And this is really important. It's Horus. This is the culmination. Horus doesn't have months to get through and conquer Terra. He has days, maybe weeks, to get through and get to Terra and kill the Emperor. Because at a certain point, he will get overrun. There are, to recap, he's got to get through the Blood Angels. He's got to get through
the Fists.
The Fists.
There's White Scars.
There's a few White Scars floating around. The Custodes. The Sisters of Silence.
But he also knows that the Ultramarines are coming back.
The Ultramarines and the Dark Angels are on their way.
And the Blood Angels are kind of already here.
The Blood Angels are mostly there. I would argue the Blood Angels are basically there.
They're getting the forces back together.
Exactly. There's a couple of random
episodes. But he also knows
15.
The biggest part about Horus is just not that the legions are on their way. And also we're talking major, the guys that are putting up huge win percentages on the leaderboards are on their way back. You don't need the Dark Angels, the Ultramarines
showing up behind you because it is game.
But the biggest thing is Horus also is, again, he was the War Master for a reason. Mm-hmm. He also knows that his forces are fraying. They're splitting apart. They are, again, infused by the forces of chaos. Yes. They are starting to splinter. They're starting to infight. Even though he is at his peak of power, his control over his forces is going into the air. He's the War Master in chaos in name alone, kind of. Everybody is doing their own thing as long as it goes along.
Well, I think the analogy I would get is if anyone's a big fan of sci-fi, what Horus has is he's trying to control anarchy. So he's got all these forces, and unless he is physically basically holding them still and telling them to do something, they just kind of wander off a little bit and do the thing. Meanwhile, he's fighting a force that is singular in purpose, which is his destruction. So he doesn't have time. So
that's the thing is, the biggest thing is that both sides don't understand that a little bit, though, because the forces of the Imperium feel like they are on their back foot because Horus has the upper hand and forces everything that's going down. But Horus knows that he does not. He cannot fight a protracted war. If this goes on too far, his forces are literally, we'll talk about this in a minute. Yeah. They're punching guys that are in an alley somewhere. And you're like, why are you kiggling that guy? You're like, yeah, I was just wandering around.
I was bored. I didn't feel like doing the things.
It's Tuesday.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. This is what I do on Tuesdays.
Yeah. So like he knows that he cannot keep grasp of all of the forces. He has his legion, which is always going to do what he's doing. He has a firm grasp on some of his forces, but he knows that the majority of his coalition of nine legions, which he's already kind of already losing a little bit of, he knows that he can only keep them for so long.
Yeah. So let's get into this. So as Horus approaches, we talk about one of the things we talk about of 40K is it is the universe is three dimensions, but we tend to talk about it in a two-dimension format. And the invasion of Saul does occur in what I would call largely a two-dimensional format, where they're coming in from the outside, not like from the underneath the top.
He comes in as a focused vanguard, almost like a phalanx formation.
Yeah. But he's coming from the outside. So the first place that he's going to hit is, who knows, maybe in the 41st millennium, it's a planet again, but it's Pluto. Brad and I are of the age where Pluto was a planet for us, and now it's not.
This is a big deal because Chaos actually starts out wildly strong, because Rogel Dorn thought that he was going to take literally weeks, maybe months. And Horus clips through this, and I think it's a weekend, basically.
Yeah, just blasts just
right blows through it.
So the first place they're going to hit is Pluto. And Pluto is a fortification. And
it's not even a planet. It's just literally a bunch of floating guns, period. It's gun platforms. And he thought this was going to be a big deal, but everybody underestimated the sheer size of the force that Horus is bringing.
So Horus does a really clever thing, as we discussed in prior episodes. It's not just his force isn't just made up of space marines. He's got evil guardsmen. He's got cultists. He's got all them. So he just goes, screw it. You got a bunch of guns on a planet. I'm going to just fly my ships at you full of people I don't care about. You can kill them. But those ships are going to crash into you, and I'm coming right behind them.
Literally kamikazes, full ships of guardsmen.
Yeah, and just human shields them into Pluto.
Well, it's also more important that he's also doing sacrifices. Mm-hmm. He's actually powering up the rest of his forces because he's literally doing ritual sacrifice while he's blowing up, while he's crashing barges into fortified moons and things. He's literally giving the cabal of witches kind of thing where I sacrifice all these guys. Why? Well, I was going to do it anyway, so might as well get some reward.
They're going to die either way, but if I do it this way, the chaos gods give me even more power.
Exactly.
Because I need all the power. But as much as Horus is super interested in invading and taking out Rogel Dorn's defenses, you know who's more excited about this, Brad?
Perdurabo.
So I think my note here is Perdurabo invades Uranus because I couldn't. I couldn't miss that joke. It's you softball it and I'm going to hit it.
They do actually have a big explosion, which Rogel Dorn does take his pound of flesh on the Pluto thing. Pluto is ridiculously a win for Horus, but in the middle of his huge, grandiose victory, they effectively get too cocky and take a big chunk out of the
forest. Rogel Dorn just detonates a bunch of stuff and blows up a giant chunk of the forest.
Like a lot, like huge amounts of warships, like big warships on that. And it isn't hugely impactful, but it is a one of the things that he didn't count for.
Yeah. And this is where Rogel Dorn really is fantastic. Rogel Dorn is a master of siege war, of fortification. And part of fortifications also is the counterattack, which is what Rogel Dorn's very... Rogel Dorn knows something. So we should probably take a pause here. Rogel Dorn knows that the Dark Angels and the Ultramarines are...
They have communicated with the Emperor. Rogel Dorn knows he doesn't have to win. Rogel Dorn knows that he needs to not lose in a certain time frame.
By enough amount of time. And on the other side of my enemy come my allies, which is the worst thing you could ever happen if you're an invading force all of a sudden discover they're also behind us.
Also, the best people coming.
Yeah.
The people coming are by far our best fight.
Yes.
Like wildly, like crazily. And so it's a big deal that while he's crazily incorrect on how long it's going to take him to get through the Pluto defenses, he does take a huge pound of flesh. It's a big deal because it's also because it puts the fear of the Imperium back into the traitors because they thought they were winning so largely. And I actually think this is one of the big things that splinters some of the forces because of the fact that they were like, look at Horus. He crushed that thing that Rogel Dorn thought was going to take weeks or months. He did it in a weekend. Then as he's doing it, all of a sudden we lost all these flagships immediately, got put it off. So you get all these people like, oh, maybe he isn't infallible.
At this stage, Horus unleashes Pederabo because the problem is that Horus can't have another Pluto. If that happens over and over again, eventually his forces will become...
Well, he'll not only will lose, Horus is going on, which is what Chaos today goes off. Horus is leading this force, our force of personality.
Yeah.
He cannot, it doesn't matter if he's not, it doesn't need a loss. He can win every single match, but he needs to win so convincingly. Right.
If he's viewed with weakness, he already had, it was Lorgar, so who cares, but he also already had one Primarch turn on him.
Exactly.
He cannot afford to lose the control of the Primarchs. If it's just Horus and the Luna Wolves, this is over pretty quick.
Yeah, this is a quick episode.
Yeah, exactly.
We're going to commercial and Horus is dead.
So that's where a lot of this is going to come into next. So Pederabo then takes over. And Pederabo and Horus is the Pederabo. Hey, I need you to go.
Horus is also feeding into it because Pederabo is also, obviously, after the Fulgrim thing, he's not super on board with all this.
Yeah. He's still just on team anti-Rogel Dorn.
Exactly.
Maybe a little bit of anti-Emperor.
And basically he says, effectively goads him into Rogel Dorn's defenses are unassailable according to Rogel Dorn.
Yeah.
And then Pederabo goes, I'm back in 100%.
I'm doing this. So at this stage, we kind of get a cool story. And I like this because when we talk about chaos, I think there's multiple levels of chaos. We have the levels of chaos that we've talked about where it's, I am fully infused with chaos, like the Plague Marines, who are now made up of chaos.
They're just, they are Nurgle.
Yeah, the Thousand Sons. Then you move into your next group who are like your cultists, who've given themselves over, but they're still fairly human. But there's still another group in the universe, which they call here, they use the term pirates, which is just terrible. But
all I have to say is Captain Jack Sparrow's in the house.
Exactly. Arr. But gangers is a term that they use. And I come from a lot of fantasy RPG background. So
it's Necromunda stuff, though.
I should go with Rifts.
You want to go Rifts?
Palladium games, that type of stuff. Yeah. This type of stuff. But this idea is that if you get too far in the future, you're going to get this. Anyone who's played Starfield, anyone who's played...
They're mercs. They're just really, literally, hey, I have a fight coming on. You're like, I don't care. Yeah. Like, I have money. Now I care.
But, or even just, hey, there's bounty to be had or booty to be had.
True.
Come on. We're going to go invade the wealthiest galaxy, the wealthiest solar system in the entire universe.
Like, wildly.
Yeah. If you can just take anything you want. So Pederabo shows up, not just with his fleet, but with also this. He's got cultists. He's got pirates. He's got space.
He has literally the motley crew. God. Yeah, you're welcome.
So bad. You were
three concerts now.
I can guarantee you there is a picture somewhere. It was taken on film of Brad with no sleeves outside of
for Motley sure.
Crew. Yeah, outside of a Motley Crew.
Oh, 100% with long hair, by the way.
With long hair.
Oh. It's awful.
Oh, I'm sure it's terrible. But so the Imperial defenses are set up and they were expecting to be invaded by other Space Marines, and now they're getting
let's pause.
Pirates.
I do go back on that though, because the Imperial defenses aren't made for small bullshit ships. This is literally a conglomeration of nonsense.
Yeah.
And the Imperium's defenses are set up to kill capital ships.
Yeah, I'm going
to
blow a hole in that capital ship, not waste this shot on a ship the size.
They literally showed up with a Millennium Falcon.
Yeah.
Like, but a billion of them.
Well, a Millennium Falcon would be a step up. These are just...
True.
These are container ships. I mean, these are, you know...
Just nonsense.
I mean, I would think of the show... Oh, man, we're going to keep making movies like Firefly. It's that type. And
yes.
I'm thinking of like that type of style where they're coming in and they just start getting overrun. But Pederabo is correct in this. He brings these small things and
no one invades until they get in too.
Exactly.
They give absolutely none of their forces to be hit by their defenses. And then all these, we'll just call them pirates. Screw it.
Yeah. Pirates.
All these pirate ships start disabling all of the defenses.
And they start running over them. With this trick, and this trick he then repeats this on Neptune, Saturn, Jupiter. Pederabo is just coming in with this group, and then of course he brings in a fun little toy, the Night Lords. Because if you're going to bring pirates, you know what you bring? Night Lord, you bring pirates plus.
You bring a crazy person with you.
So they've got the Loyalists kind of on the back foot.
Who, by the way, has now escaped for the second time.
Oh yeah, well we'll get into Conrad.
I'm just saying he literally has been captured twice.
Although one thing I do want to note here, it's because we're going to foreshadow a future episode here. For those who are not aware, one of the moons of Jupiter is Titan.
It's not there anymore.
Yeah. While all this invasion is happening, there are ships, there are pirates, there are capital fleets. They all just seem to go mysteriously past this one moon of Jupiter called Titan. And I think my note here is, foreshadowing. But it's going to come up because Malkador hit it.
It's just gone.
No one can see it. No one knows it's there. It's not just see it.
It's gone.
Well, no, it's there.
Oh, it's kind of. It's outside of space and time. How about that?
But that's what I think. It's interesting when we talk about this, and I'm just foreshadowing for an episode, and people who know what
I'm talking about. Grey Knights.
Yeah, people who know what I'm talking about know what I'm talking about. But at this stage, Pederabo has now achieved what he's always wanted to achieve. He told Rogaldorn to suck it and pushed right through Rogaldorn's defenses.
And Rogaldorn, to his credit, realizes that none of this shit matters.
Yeah.
Like, I don't have enough forces to waste outside of the immediate Mars, Luna, Terra.
It's Luna, Terra. That's what I care about.
I mean, he kind of cared about Mars. Let's be honest. Well,
he would have. But what I'm saying is he needs Terra is where the Emperor is.
And correct. Luna's, well, again, he needs to stall. He doesn't need to win. And that's the big thing about Rogaldorn. I will give him, even though I hate him so much. I mean, not like Lorgar, but like real hate.
Well, I actually, don't worry, guys. I wrote stories into here of all the times in this process that Rogaldorn just ass. God. And I'm going to make Brad tell you those stories.
So basically, Rogaldorn realizes that, one, I don't have the forces to extend out to Jupiter, Saturn, whatever.
Right.
I have to basically make this a grinder. I have to literally, I can't win this fight, period.
Yeah.
But all I need to do is stall this fight, and I can't do it out in the system.
It's this piece of why lose all my forces on Neptune when I have to fight on Terra anyway. I'm just going to use the
Neptune. Real fight only matters here.
Exactly. So this begins falling back. At this moment, though, the Dark Mechanicum do actually kind of rise up out of Mars and they attack. So as we said in the last episode, Rogaldorn has put a blockade up around Mars. They've got Mars fairly well held. But as Horus and his forces breach into the solar system, that's when the Dark Mechanicum attack.
Activates, basically.
Yeah, and they just explode up. And now they effectively stop civil warring on Mars and begin warring within there. So this is adding a new front.
And this is, and the thing about the Dark Mechanicum is not just the things that the Space Marines need. It is literally Titans.
Yeah.
And it's not just Titans. It's not like three Titans that are...
It's a lot of Titans.
It's a legion of Titans.
Legion of Titans coming up. Also, they've secretly been building capital ships that then pop out of the planet fully armed and shooting. So it's Horus has now fought his way through to Mars. He's lost, you know, ships and troops in the process. Gets to Mars and hits that HP, like, you know.
He gets the power up button. It's a new life.
And we're back in.
He's literally losing forces, and all of a sudden he goes, oh, cool, I'm going to get better shit than I had before.
Let's go.
Yeah. That's a huge deal, because it also is a huge psychological deal for the defenders of Terra, because they kind of thought they were winning, and then, oh, crap. The guys that we thought were on our side, oh, yeah, they made a bunch of shit for our enemies.
Yeah, this is not great.
This is,
And our enemies just grab it and power up. So if we're doing, like, you know, if you understand your space geography, what's next after Mars? Earth.
Well, let's talk about Luna. We got to talk about Luna, because Luna isn't Luna. Luna is a random moon that stops us from getting hit with that many meteors.
Yeah.
Luna in the 40K universe is a literal giant rock of fortifications. But Luna isn't Luna. It isn't one thing. The entirety of the moon plus everything that's in orbit.
Yeah.
So there's one orbit of the moon, but the orbit of the moon is literally 1 foot by 1 foot by 1 foot defense satellites.
Guns. Yeah.
Right. Like all around Terra. So it is, yes, one big block of the moon, which is legitimately Looney Tunes style guns pointed, pointed at someone else. But like, it's also like infinite number of satellites also bombed and guns.
Yeah, these aren't Verizon wireless satellites. These are.
And it is a full network. It is, again, 3D. It's not a circle. It's a full sphere of defense satellites that either have guns or huge explosives. And we're not talking like click, click, boom, like IED. We're talking like planet-killing bombs in orbit.
So Luna presents a problem for Horus in that it's technically unbreachable. And if you were to approach it, Luna, the Luna system, the Luna defense system, probably what we should refer to it as, would eliminate your fleet.
Because it blows up capital ships. Their bombs are literally capital ship destroyers. Like one of the bombs that are around will blow up.
And there's more than enough for your entire fleet.
Correct.
So,
and they're, I mean, to be perfectly honest, also, they're cloaked.
And now we're going to get into a little interesting thing here about Lorgar. So as we said in the last episode, Horus has kicked Lorgar out. But Lorgar knew this moment was coming, that he was going to enter into...
Well, Lorgar knows, let's be honest, the Chaos Gods know that there is a celestial event going on.
And this celestial event is called the Comet. That's the quotations, because G.W. ran of Latin names to call it. Instead of calling it Cometus, they went with the Comet. And the Comet, it's not actually a real comet. It's actually a random piece of Dark Age of Technology structure that appears every 1,000 years within Sol. Apparently, the Emperor during Unification Wars just captured it as a, like, look at me.
Look how awesome I am.
Really capture, because it still disappears for 1,000 years. So honestly, I've read this 5 times and went, I don't follow, and moved on with my day. But Lorgar realized this is actually a pretty big deal. And again, it's not really Lorgar as much as the gods of chaos. The comet gives them a way through. So Horus, thanks to some advice from chaos gods, sends Ahriman and the word bearers that he's allowed to keep to go capture this comet and begin a, I don't know what you'd call it, ritual sacrifice?
I mean, they kill a shit ton of cultists. Like a metric. You know what? I'm staying with my shit ton because there's no other.
Yeah.
They kill so many people. And because of this, they effectively give I'm going to give my World of Warcraft people. They literally open up the portal and the orcs start running out.
Yeah. And so they open a warp rift on this comet as it passes over the moon. And again, this comet is there every 1,000 years. So Rogaldorn wasn't shooting at it.
And nothing's greater for your safety than Angron, Fulgrim, and Horus showing up personally with their legions on the moon to hand-to-hand you in a fight that you thought you were going to shoot people. Yeah. So it's never a great thing when a giant shows up and punches you when you thought you were going to be shooting him for, you know, 5,000 kilometers away.
We'll see them coming. As they kept past Mars, we'll blow them up. No, they just blew up this comet, in quotes, above our heads. And out of that comet spilled three of the legions I want nothing to do with Angron, Fulgrim, and Horus coming out. And they are, you know, 6 inches from your nose.
And yeah, not how just, far you wanted them away.
Yeah. And just begin running through the moon.
And this is a big deal, though, because the moon's actually set up for ranged combat. And if you've ever played 40K, if your army is all shooting and you accidentally or just don't have the right resources to keep people at bay, you're in a bad news bears situation.
Well, yeah, melee armies touching shooting armies, bad thing. And that's kind of what happens here.
He takes the moon over like kind of fast because they are not set up for that.
We'll be right back after a quick break.
It's time to accept it. The holidays are upon us, and finding gifts for people is never easy or really fun. Luckily, we at the 40K Lorecast have a new sponsor, which will help you make your holiday shopping fast and easy. Uncommon Goods makes holiday shopping stress-free and joyful with thousands of one-of-a-kind gifts you can't find anywhere else. Add some personalization to your holiday shopping with Uncommon Goods. Did I go there and buy the game Fart Bingo? Yeah, I did. Is it for my child to play with his friends? We'll go with, yeah. At the same time, I was able to get a cocktail smoker. So yeah, those are probably all for me. Anyway, that's what's great about Uncommon Goods. They have uncommon, get it, collection of items you can choose from, allowing you to pick up a fun variety of items this holiday season. You'll find thousands of gift ideas that you won't find anywhere else. So, shop early, have fun, and cross some names off your list today. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/40klore, 40klore. That's uncommongoods.com/40klore for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary. Oh, oh, oh,
O'Reilly. Check engine, ABS, or maintenance light on? Take the guesswork out of your warning lights with O'Reilly Veriscan. The service is free and provides a report with solutions verified by ASE-certified master technicians. And if you need help, we could recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today. Oh, 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 O'Reilly
Auto Parts. But as the moon falls, Dorne, this is where we're going to make Brad tell a story.
Oh, Jesus.
And, oh, you know you love this story. So the moon is falling. Dorne realizes he needs the moon, and he brings his fleet over into...
I refuse to actually read about the Remembrancer, by the way.
It's fine. You don't have to read about her. But we do need to explain what... So as much as Brad likes to talk crap on Rogel Dorne for him being boring...
Scrub.
That being said, hey, Brad, can Rogel Dorne fight?
That dude's bad as shit. I don't even think he's ever lost.
Yeah.
He's actually badass.
For as much as we talk crap, Rogel Dorne, of all the Primarchs, it's him and Leman Russ are people you really don't want to be fighting.
Yeah, I don't want to be in hand-to-hand with those guys.
These are monsters. So Rogel Dorne launches himself up at the moon. And as he's getting close to the moon, another trap is sprung.
He also wrecks two named demons.
Yeah. Back-to-back here.
Like, I mean, he's wrecks back-to-back them.
Yeah. And so as he appears on the moon, it turns out that there was a plant within his ship. And it was a Remembrancer. For those who read the books, you really should read the books of Marisande. But as he's approaching, a true demon appears on his ship.
Like in the middle of the ship.
And it's named Samus. And Samus is not, when we say demon, we're not talking a bloodthirster or something. We're talking...
Ooh,
like, and Dorne,
full entity of the war.
And Dorne just goes to town on this thing. But what's funny is it is it's almost perpetual at this stage. So Dorne, I mean, I'll let Brad do it. Brad, walk me through what Rogel Dorne does to
Samus. I do not want to at all.
I know.
Dorne puts the beats, like, I don't even know, because the time was warped at this point in time. So he beats the shit out of this demon.
Kills it. It reincarnates.
But he whoops it like a bunch. But you don't know how much he whoops it because the demon itself warps time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so you're not sure how much time is gone. So Dorne either beats this demon up for 10 minutes or 10,000 years kind of thing. Like, but he wins.
He never loses, does he?
Exactly.
He never loses.
Dorne literally thunderdomes this demon, a powerful demon, over and over and over, and just keeps rickrolling it. And because it's Dorne and he's boring as shit, he doesn't care that it's taking him this long.
I'll just keep doing it.
He's just got to just keep doing this.
But eventually, the source of the demon, which is this Melisandre, jumps into a reactor and kills herself. And then actually that actually closes the door that the demon was coming back in. So the demon is gone. The problem is at this level, this fight that Rogel's been stuck in, slowed him up enough. And at this stage, Luna's lost.
He basically gets slowed down. But the thing is his entire force that he was with kind of waits for his fight to be over. And they don't know how to interact with it because you're kind of watching two gods fight other, and you have no idea, hey man, how should I help Odin fight? You're like, I'm probably just going to stand here and just wait and see how it works out.
And just see what they do.
Yeah. So, like, I don't really think I have the mojo to get into this. So once he's done, Luna is lost.
It's too late. So I think what I wrote here, that this is a breather moment. So we're about to get into the final fight of the heresy. So now we've got, I would say, some goals adjustments. Horus has seized the solar system with the exception of Terra. So Earth is now surrounded. His goals are very clear. He's going to have to go down to Earth, and he's going to have to get through the Imperial Palace and kill the Emperor.
But he wants to kill the Emperor one-on-one.
Yeah.
That goal has never changed, is he has to prove to the Emperor that he is right. Yep. It isn't just, he's not going to defeat the Emperor. He has to show the Emperor that he is correct. He is the one that's in the right. I am just, and my view is the right thing. But also, this is also when Horus finally, effectively, sacrifices a lot of himself to the gods.
Yeah,
at this because stage. He is desperate to be right. He is desperate to solidify the deal, but they're also fucking with him. That's a big thing, though.
I think that's important because it's this entire time, this whole thing's been going on. The Chaos Gods have been whispering in Horus's ear. Now we've covered twice now. His soul has been in the Immaterium, and he sacrificed it twice to them. But even as that, they still want more, and they're constantly giving him that deal. You know, give more of yourself to me, and we'll give you more power.
This is big though because at the invasion of Terra.
He's not conscious.
Well, that's the thing is that the gods of chaos literally say, well, you know that your father's more powerful than you. Mm-hmm. If you don't let us help you, you're going to lose for sure. You know how powerful your dad is. And you're not going to make it. If you don't let us help you, you won't be able to be right. Mm-hmm. And at this point in time, Horus is the king of rationalization at this point in time. Yep. Every horrific thing that he's done has been for the great. I am right, and this is how you show people you're right. You have to be stronger than them. You have to be more powerful. And they keep giving them you do know that your dad's better than you. You know what I mean? If you don't let us help you, he will always be better than you.
Exactly.
So Horus kind of, at this point, they don't go into a ton, but he basically capitulates and becomes a plaything almost of the gods.
Let's get into the Siege of Terra then. So it's party time.
It's party time.
Horus opens up with an orbital bombardment of the palace and everything around it.
Absolutely nothing happens for this.
Yeah, just bombs it. Problem is, Pederabo is the one actually doing this, and he's trying to find the flaw in Dorne's plan.
He's not even trying to be anything. He's just trying to screw around with... To be honest with you, this would have gone better except for the fact that he's basically screwing with his brother.
Yeah.
He's just taunting him. He's trying to find a flaw, but he's also trying to be like, I'm better than you.
Yeah. I'm going to come through your defense.
Right.
You like, can't stop.
I'm going to do this. And instead of basically focus firing and doing things, he wants to basically show him that he's better than him.
Yeah.
So he's drawing this out bad guy style when he doesn't need to. He just is. That really is what's going on.
That's a good point. Meanwhile, you've got Angron and Fulgrim, who are just, I think my notes here are just bored. They're so bored. It's a fun side story here. Angron actually gets so angry at this point. He starts ripping
Angry Ron gets so angry?
Yeah. just starts ripping his own ship apart.
You gotta remember, well, pause on this. He murders the bridge.
Yeah, kills everyone on the bridge.
The bridge, yeah. Not like a guy on the bridge. He kills everyone.
So Karn, who comes up later.
By the way, how is Karn the voice of reason here?
Well, the voice of reason. Karn's just the solution here. So Karn decides to call up Conrad and say, hey, remember that labyrinth that you threw Vulcan and he escaped from? Can I borrow that for a little bit? Why? Oh, just my dad.
Just reasons.
I gotta put my dad in it. And so they throw Angron into this Night Lord capital ship in a labyrinth to just try and break the labyrinth, which he, you know, it's better than the bridge of his own ship.
We should actually give credit to the fact that distant British dad,
yeah,
is, as usual, doing very important things that he tells no one about.
Yeah.
Literally, hey, dad, why aren't you helping us repel these invaders? And he goes, yeah, son, I'm doing stuff. I'm very busy. You're like, and then what he could have said was, I'm literally single-handedly stopping Terra from being overrun by demons, yeah, the entire warp is trying to collapse on Terra, and I am by myself stopping that from happening.
An interesting story they talk about in the books here is that Horus knows about this, and he's concerned that his brothers, Angron, Mortarion, Fulgrim, are all demon princes. And he's worried that if they were to warp the jump down to the planet, this barrier the Emperor has put up to keep demons out would just evaporate them.
By the way, he's not keeping people out. He's disintegrating demons as they touch
So this is why Angron and Fulgrim, as much as they are bored, cannot go planet side until Horus is able to push this stuff back. Fun story, though, on Horus. He's not doing great right now.
Oh, no. He accepted a little bit too much warp energy into his body, and he is now Horus / out-of-body Horus experience.
Yeah. He is completely...
He is a Disney ride right now.
He's basically in a borderline coma, and this is the first time... Abaddon's come up a lot in the stories, but this is the first time Abaddon now takes over the Legion and begins running...
My favorite, the guy that's called the Destroyer, and his nickname is the Destroyer. The translation for Abaddon is Destroyer.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's the Destroyer of the Destroyer.
Oh.
Yeah.
Good job. Good job naming mechanics. After enough bombardment, it is time for Planetfall. And the first ones to go down are Plague Marines.
Which is weird, by the way, because they're the last to arrive first to be on Planetfall.
Well, this was a promise he made to Mortarion. Because he told Mortarion, I'll let you go and kill the Emperor, even though Horus was really going to do it. So he couldn't hold him back any further. But also, if you're going to do siege, you know who's really good for sieging? The guys bring all the biologic weapons.
And as usual, Mortarion's on point, but he also does, and you could say that part of his people that were with him, they wreck the populace also.
Yeah. Oh, it's just... This invasion of Terra, as much as we talk about it being an attack on the Emperor, there was a very quick decision that the entire planet was with the Emperor, and anyone and everyone there was fair game.
Yeah, like people, like half, maybe more, to be honest with you, of the Death Guard just show up at the mall.
Yeah.
Not as bad as the Emperor's children. We'll go into that
fun story in a little bit.
Yeah.
Now, the one part I was actually confused with, and I'll ask you, Brad, is like, so they had a whole piece of like, the Emperor's put up his barriers so nothing, no demons can get down. And they send down the Plague Marines, who are demon infused.
But they're not. They are and they are not. They're chaosed, warp infused, juiced up, but they're not actually demons.
Okay, then that.
And what happens is he's effectively saying it's kind of the Daywalker thing. Kind of, he's protecting you versus specifically this. But if you're human / this.
It was a part of the, I was trying to understand it. I'm reading it.
You basically break the rules by being not just a thing of chaos, which is why he's only stopping demons. You know, he's literally only stopping things that are only of the warp.
That makes more sense. So as they land, Mortarion's old buddy, Jagadekhan, decides this is we're not letting this happen.
And it's immediately punked.
Yeah. Well, they push through. They attack.
I apologize. Yeah. It's just the fact that he basically calls out. He does an Achilles Hector call out.
Yeah.
And then gets smoked 6 seconds later. He's like, you cannot take me. You're not going to take Tara. And then goes, you're stabbed. And he's like,
stabs him with a poison blade and he falls over.
And he immediately he immediately gets dragged back in the fortress.
But now we're going to see the first appearance. And there's a lot of Primarch fight that we're going to get through at this point. But at this point, Sanguinius, with his wings that aren't wings, his flying power, whatever, shoots in and grabs him. And this is kind of one of the cool things about this. As this is going on, the Emperor's sphere of power is beginning to
weaken.
This is what Horus's real goal was. As Brad was mentioning, at first, the Emperor's protecting the entire planet. But as more and more attacks come in, the size of his force field begins to shrink.
He's eventually protecting him and three guys.
So Khan, Jagatai Khan has been stabbed with a poison blade. See, a la Horus, you know, on whatever planet that was.
It was a moon. Thank you very much.
On the moon. He was a la Horus on the moon and is now dying from this poison blade. Sanguinius grabs him and brings him back to the Imperial Palace. As soon as he gets close to the Imperial Palace,
he's fine.
Yeah. The Emperor's power is just clear the poison, and Jagatai Khan pops up and says, all right, let's do that again.
Yeah. And also, Space Jesus, I have to give power to the Blood Angels.
Oh, he's incredible.
Because Sanguinius, literally, he's doing a bunch of things that are not just for the fight. He's doing things to raise, he's doing things that a figurehead does.
Yeah.
He wants to show people,
he's the leader.
We can win. You need to see me winning. That's what Sanguinius does. By the way, he's super ineffectual as far as the defense.
Oh, it's terrible.
But he's super big on raising the fact that, hey, guys, I'm winning. That means that you're winning. Everybody can win.
One thing, though, that is important here is as Jagatai Khan wakes up and comes back from his poison, he begins telling the loyalists what he saw. And what he saw was the traitors were erecting siege engines, but they were also doing rituals out there. They don't know why, but they're
also
doing this.
Also, everywhere. It's not just rituals. Like, it's not like one ritual's going on. They are doing rituals just freaking
Blood sacrifice. I mean, they brought a lot of, let's just say, they came to Terra with a lot more cultists than they were planning on leaving Terra with.
They are literally, they just want to do these rituals, and they want to effectively summon the Immaterium. They want to summon chaos to Terra. That is their end game. They're like, we can't just win a conventional war.
We don't have enough people. So that's where this goes.
But, how many people does the warp have? Oh, carry the one? Infinite. We have literally infinite amounts of people.
And at this moment, those rituals begin to go off. And we start, and what happens is this begins to open gates to the Immaterium, and hordes of demons are appearing on the
floor. Pouring out, by the way.
Pouring out and coming right at the gates of Terra. So surrounding, as we were talking about earlier, there's this barrier protecting the interior, and they're just hitting this barrier.
Great Knight fans, the Aegeus.
It's the Aegeus. And so these demons are bouncing into this Aegeus shield, and the traitors are shooting at the Aegeus shield, and it's being bombed, and eventually it falls. It falters like any good force field in any sci-fi film, it falls. And what do you do? When some of this happens, you open that labyrinth that's got the world's angriest demon Primarch in it and just drop him on the planet.
Oh, I'm sorry. You said angriest? No, because he has now reached maximum angry, because he is super pissed that you put him in the labyrinth. And you basically let him out a doorway and went, he'll go that way.
He'll go that way. And exactly the way he went.
Whew.
And I actually, when you read the novel, it goes one way. But my brain, because I just wanted to laugh at it. The problem Angron has is Angron just begins killing his way all the way up to the gates. But the Aegis shield isn't the only one. There's now the next layer down. And the next layer down is at the walls of the fortification. So Angron just kills anything between where he currently is and hit.
Friend or foe, doesn't matter.
Gets all the way to the wall. And the new Emperor's barrier is there. And he's just like, I don't know, Mongo style, just trying to come in, trying to push through and can't get through. And meanwhile, Sanguinius is just shit-talking him from the top of the tower.
Wildly.
Because Sanguinius knows Angron can't get to him, which is just making Angron so much angrier, but he can't do anything about it. And I just, there's a better, if you read the story, it's a lot more dynamic, but I just have this humor of someone, of these are all brothers, of a brother on top of a wall going, na 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 na, you can't.
I'm assuming he was just throwing shit at him.
And just, you know, just mooning him and you know, at him and that kind of stuff. Or maybe like Monty Python, at, like the French at the top of the castle, like Monty Python.
I'll touch you once again.
I will touch you once again. I fart in your general direction.
Yeah. See, he can't get in. And the thing is that it's a big deal in this is that at this point, the defenders are in a pretty shitty situation. Mm-hmm. Also, the populace is wrecked. And no one talks about this enough. Well, again,
a lot of people outside the gates.
Like got ruined.
Yeah. Who are just
2/3 of the planet got trucked.
And these guys, the people outside the gates, they were all handed, you know, we in 40 we call the last gun, it's basically a flashlight, and said, hey, go shoot whatever shows up. Well, and what
you,
shows
you
up
is literally a got handed thirster. A 38 special.
Yeah.
And you were supposed to take on a monstrosity.
Yeah. And just like, oh, this isn't going well. And you get that you know, image of them shooting a space marine and bouncing space marine looking at them going, gonna go make you not exist now.
Like, this would be so much cooler if I wasn't wearing a bulletproof vest versus this demon.
Now bummed. They need to, Horus now needs to siege the final piece of the other capital. And what he realizes is the only chance to do this is to quote unquote distract the Emperor. The Emperor is using all of his psychic powers to keep these barriers up. And some other barriers he's also keeping up on the inside of the palace. We'll get to those in a minute. So Horus then enlists Magnus, because you know who's good at breaching the Emperor's barriers?
Because he's already done it before. He's
done it before. It is Magnus. So Horus and Magnus team up, and they start trying to just basically attack the Emperor.
From everywhere, too.
Yeah.
They're literally trying to figure out, hey, let's just attack him everywhere and see if anywhere is weak. Because we know that, yes, he's the most powerful psyker in the galaxy, laughably.
Right.
But how about we just attack literally the 10 different things that he's trying to protect at the same time and just keep hitting him and seeing what we can do about it.
Now, though, Horus is pressed for time. So he needs to get down there and he needs to kill them. And the issue is they'd be using drop pods. They'd be using this and that to get down there. That's not a good way to really unload onto a planet.
They're also getting murder shit in.
Yeah.
Like their drop pods are getting just like wrecked. Duck hunting.
Dorne is really good at fortifications.
Yeah, like they are losing tens of thousands of Marines, which is a ridiculous amount because they can't make planet sign.
Yeah.
So, and this is super jacked up because they kind of gloss over this. They start landing capital ships, which can't land. Literally cannot. I'm going to say that again. They're not supposed to be in the atmosphere.
Yeah, they're supposed to only be in space. And they start bringing these things down to the planet.
Yeah, they just are driving them into the planet. Yeah. They're not coming back up.
Yeah, opening, I guess, the airlock and saying, hey, guys, you want to jump out here? This feels like a good spot.
Which is also, they're doing that with Titans, who are, I don't know, city-sized robots. And just going, figure it out, yo. And that's their plan. Which is right about the time you know you're getting a little desperate when you're like, hey, how should we land? Just take the capital ships and crash them into the ground. Won't that kill everybody? I mean, not everyone. Like, somebody will survive.
Some of them. There is a spaceport right next to the Imperial Palace, because where else would it be? Actually, there's a couple of them. But where else would it be? And they decide to take the spaceport. The traders need to land. They need to be able to get their, like, Titans and everything else.
And this is a nuts battle, by the way.
Yeah. Petarabo goes, that's it. And he sends in Iron Warriors, World Eaters, everybody to go and take
this down. He also swamps it with every cultist, every corrupted Imperial Guard. He puts in the bodies and just says, 40K players, I'm going to put so much OC on this objective.
Yeah. This is all me. I mean, and so Dorne sees this coming. and decides if they land, we could get overrun on the planet.
Because this is where they're going to land everything. And it also is 2 feet away from where they want to go.
Yeah, exactly. It's not really across town. And there's a piece here where it's like, I mean, these things move pretty fast. You guys could grab a different one, but I guess from a story standpoint, it wouldn't be as good. So
we need the one that's next door to the Emperor.
Yeah, just a little bit in the lazy side. So they come in, Dorn launches a furious counterattack.
It starts wrecking everyone.
And going through, and it actually begins to work. He loses a spaceport. He begins taking back the spaceport.
Hold on. I want to say what happens next, though. You remember the guy that was super, super pissed about not being able to get inside the walls? Well, he found out where some fighting was going on.
Yeah.
And he's super okay with joining that fight.
And Dorne, I mean, I'd laugh. Dorne and his forces, Iron Warriors, were pushing back. The regular World Eaters were pushing back. Heavy weapons, traitor troops, cultists. But they couldn't push back an Angron.
No one kills Ads like Angron kills Ads. If you're not fighting a main character or a final boss, Angron is undefeatable.
Yeah, he and Angron comes in and just kills effectively everyone.
He does. He literally starts taking all their heavy weapons and he's just cleaving them in two.
Yeah. So now Dorne has an issue. And so the issue is he needs to buy time. He's getting, their messages are first coming through that he's getting more notes from Ultramarines and Dark Angels who are telling him we're going to be there between 6 hours and 7 days.
Yeah, because it's the warp. Is, you don't
the
know.
The warp is messy, but he now knows he's getting communication. He's got time. He knows his plan can work. These guys will get here.
It's a real amount of time. It's not a, we need to hold Terra for 6 months kind of thing.
Exactly. So he needs to make it a call. And one challenge that he's got in making this call is he's got to decide where are the fronts I'm going to fight you on. And the call he's going to make is we're going to fall back and we're going to give up some ground because we have to preserve our troops.
He doesn't give up some ground. He gives up the entire populace of a hemisphere.
The entire planet, actually. He gives up the planet all but, I don't know, 3 square miles.
Right. He literally, you said he goes to three, from 4 fronts to 3. He legitimately goes, hey, man, if you're not like within line of sight of me, sorry about your luck. He literally dooms a lot of the planet of Terra to just go, my bad, figure it out.
We'll be right back after a quick break.
There were 4 potential fronts, the Gorgon Bar, Colossi Gate, the Saturni Gate, and the Eternity Wall Spaceport. And what Dorne decides is that I don't have any spaceships, so a spaceport doesn't really do me any good. So I'm going to focus on the bar and 2 gates, and I'm going to give up the spaceport. And we're going to cover all 4 of these spots because these are actually some pretty cool fights we're going to get into right now.
Like, I mean, really also, cool Space Jesus goes buck wild.
He goes to town. So the fart with the Gorgon Bar, and I was able to pull maps of this because when you read these things, it's a little bit tricky when you actually look at it. So the Gorgon Bar is just a wall outside of the main Lion Gate. So whenever you build a fortress, you have...
Remember that we're also talking about a giant amount of space.
Yeah.
Because this is an Earth-sized battle. Because Terra is effectively one large fortress. Well,
this whole fight is actually happening just at...
But I'm saying, like, the whole thing is focused, but there's literally a planet-sized fight going on.
Yeah.
And Rogel Dorne just decides, I don't care about the rest of it. I literally need the Emperor to not die, and everything gets pulled back.
So the first place we're going to cover is the Gorgon Bar. And this is just one of the walls. It's kind of one of the more exterior walls. If you guys ever seen, like, really well-built medieval castles... Or actually, Lord of the Rings.
Just make those walls like 15 times as tall.
Exactly. And so this is one of them. This one is defended by Sanguinius with the Blood Angels and some Imperial Fists that the Iron Warriors decide to launch themselves at it. And so...
Sorry about your luck, bro. Sanguinius.
Yeah, so the Iron Warriors decide, you know, here's what we're going to do. We're not going to break the wall down ourselves. We're going to bring a giant walking robot. Just a humongous city-sized death robot. It's going to blast a hole through the walls.
I don't even know how to describe this because it's so ridiculously big. The robots are so big that the guys are inside have to have air supplies because they're so high up that they need to literally have oxygen if they get breached. And Space Jesus decides, I ain't going out like that, and decides to solo these.
Yeah, flies over, takes a spear, and just shoves it through.
Again, he basically took a aircraft carrier and put legs on it, which is what this is, and went, I'm going to melee that, which is what he did.
And one of my favorite parts is that these things are demon-infused. So they're not, when we talk about a robot, we think about a robot being piloted by a person. These things actually are actually somewhat chaos entities.
Well, they have entities, and they're not just entities. They're entities that are shackled against their will.
To this thing. And they watch Sanguinius one hand, this one, and the other three run away.
Yeah, which is probably the right decision because the guy, the flying angel with wings, meleeed a aircraft carrier. I'm just, again, saying, figure out what weapon you want to use on an aircraft carrier and figure out how you're punching to death an aircraft carrier.
A spear. And through, So this does two things. Well, three things. One, the other Titans run away, that one. Two, massively invigorates the loyalists.
Which again, this is where Sanguinius through this entire fight is only picking his fights for the biggest PR, basically.
Yep.
He's doing stuff, but he realizes that I'm awesome, but like I can only be in so many places. Like if they bring too many people, I still lose because they just run past me and kill people. So he's trying to pick his biggest PR moments to invigorate the defenders because this is a lost cause they're just trying to hold. Again, the defenders aren't looking to win because they can't. Well, they're looking to stand
here. I think when they look at it, we're talking about a really ugly form of war right now. It's really whoever has the most morale will win. And Sanguinius is just doing that, like, let's do morale. The thing that happens is now the Iron Warriors just kind of say, well, that didn't work, and they bail. So they have now held the Gorgon Gate. So we move over to the Colossi Gate, which is kind of on the other side of the fortress from the Gorgon Bar. And this one, the Death Guard are coming in, and they're attacking and trying to bring down the gate. And Jagati Khan is there with Constantine Valdor.
Which, by the way, he's told to definitely stand here, defend the gate. And Khan goes, no problem. I'm 100% down with your plan. Okay, guys, charge.
Yes.
Like, I believe everything you just said, but also I'm going to go outside.
And they do. And he charges straight out into them and discover that Magnus and Ahriman are out there, a cabal of sorcerers, and just start getting wrecked.
And again, they have not met at this point in time. They have not met sorcery. They have not met chaos and fused.
They have not. But what happens is that White Scars, in a real massive stroke of luck, are one of the few legions that had psychers.
No, I'm just saying, but they haven't. True story, because they have actual slight counters.
Yep.
I say slight because they counter it, but they just don't get obliterated.
They should have been wiped by Magnus and Ahriman walking out there, and they get lucky in that they have their own defenses.
They know that the psychics exist. They're not just ready for they're not ready for Doom Bolts. Mm-hmm. How about that?
Yeah. And so Jagati Khan goes out with his jet bikes and pretty quickly discover they have to turn right around because they go right into warp. Just mass amounts of warp attacks and come back to it. But they still are able to hold Magnus and Ahriman at bay. So whereas on the Gorgon Bar, the defenders were turned away, on the Colossi Gate, they were kind of stalemated.
Yeah, I don't even know if they were stalemated. They were slowed down.
Yeah.
I think that that Magnus and Ahriman and company were more surprised that their psychic attacks didn't. And this is 1,000% just my opinion. I felt that they were more like, oh, we thought this would already wipe everybody, and it didn't. It was still really successful, but they didn't realize that anybody had defenses against them.
Yeah,
no one has so far.
And out of nowhere, the White Scar librarians actually were able to fight the warp storm effectively that Magnus and Aragorn were creating over top of them and keep it at bay, which allowed Jagged Khan to turn back around and go back to the thing he was told to do in the beginning, which is stay on this wall and shoot at them. So they did that. Now we'll move over to the third one, which is the Saturnine Gate. The Saturnine Gate is on the opposite side of the fortress. Is this wall kind of surrounding, basically on the backside.
I mean, do we consider this the main fight?
Well, it became the main fight because during the bombardment, Petarabo noticed that there was literally a crack in the earth beneath the gate. And he saw that and went, this is it. This is how we're going to breach Rogel.
It's basically the breach in the Circle of Saul, protective circle.
Exactly.
But this does become the fight.
This is
if you go with just numbers, I guess.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because this is the commitment. This is Fulgrim goes, this is my chance. So he decides to send Petarabo says, this is my chance. So he sends Fulgrim with his entire Emperor Children's Legion down to attack the gate from above. Then he grabs Abaddon and a bunch of other kind of here's key characters to go into the underground crack, because his idea is Dorne doesn't know this crack is here, so I'm going to fight above it with the entirety of the Emperor's Children. Then I'm going to jump below and sneak my way in. Problem is that Dorne's really good at what he does. So Dorne's completely aware of it. I believe my note here is suck it, Petarabo. Dorne's completely aware the crack is there and realizes that Petarabo will go for this said crack and reinforces said crack.
Yeah, but he also reinforces it with plot armor a madman, because he takes, hey, were you a main character in books before this?
Yeah.
I'm going to put you in this crack because there's no way that you can stop plot armor.
For those of you who've read the early Horus Heresy books and have read the later Horus Heresy books, but play modern 40K and say, hey, why is this really important character from the novel not in 40K? This battle.
That is true. Everyone dies. Yeah.
This battle. This is where hey, whatever happened to baby Horus? Problem solved. Whatever happened to Gibri? Problem solved. Whatever happened to Tormagadden? Problem solved. This just ends all of them. So what ends up occurring here, and I just like this idea, is that the Emperor's Children are launching themselves into the wall above, and down below, Abaddon and his buddies all warp in. Garvel Loken, Nathaniel Garrow, a bunch of
main characters,
all the loyalist main characters are waiting in traps around in this kind of subterranean area. And just begin to slaughter them as they
wreck.
Just wreck them. They are, and the fun thing about this, these guys are sneaking in. They're warping in. They're expecting to get no resistance. And the second they appear, they get shot in the head.
And they lose, the traitor marines lose a bonkers town. Yeah,
everyone who invades down here is killed. They slaughter them to the point Abaddon almost gets killed and then runs away after almost getting killed. A theme that Abaddon will.
He rocks that.
Yeah. For every time Gilliman appears at the last minute to save the day, Abaddon runs away at the last minute. He's the Skeletor of 40K.
Skeletor.
He is. The last of these is the Eternity Wall Spaceport. I did want to touch on this. It was a three-front battle. There was a fourth, and Dorne just realized, I can't fight on all four, so I'm going to let the spaceport go. He tells the defenders there as much, saying, look, you guys are on your own.
This is a good story, actually. Yeah. You're not doing them credit, please. John, because of the fact that Dorne legitimately tells these people, we can't defend this fourth front, whatever.
And you can't retreat because I can't get you back to the walls.
Correct. And effectively, these guys go, we're not giving you any reinforcements. You are 1,000,000,000%, laughably going to die. Mm-hmm. There's going to be 50 times as many people attacking you. If you can just not die for a little bit, that would help a lot.
Yeah, give me 3 minutes.
And these guys go buck wild and literally fight. Well,
it's one of my favorite stories. They get fought back and Angron shows up. And Angron,
by the way, he is everywhere in this fight.
I mean, Angron has a really good time fighting around Terra. And I just like the story. So Angron shows up, and all of a sudden, death, murder, kill Angron just disappears for a second. And he goes,
I think more it's he's trying to talk shit to them. Yeah, is more than anything.
Fine, but he gets look, you guys can surrender. You know,
they shoot him in the head with an anti-aircraft.
Well, yeah, let's see. And their response is, so Angron says to them, you are the loyalists. And Angron is telling you, surrender and I will spare you. And their response is to take one of the guns they have on this platform, which is designed to shoot a spaceship.
I did the disservice. Yeah. I said anti-aircraft. It was an anti-spaceship gun.
Yeah. That's designed to break up a
It's not also designed to be turned this way.
Yeah.
They had actually made it so it could.
They actually lowered it and shot Angron in the face with it. So Angron, in his little speech of you should all surrender. And again, what about this is a break from angry murder everything. Angron gets shot in the face with an anti-spaceship gun, disintegrates instantly.
And immediately shows back up.
And then reforms. So pissed off.
He is not excited about that.
So, needless to say, at this stage, the Eternity Wall spaceport falls.
I mean, they did go out in style.
They went out in style. They did.
Because they were also supposed to be a blip.
Exactly.
Like, they were supposed to be like, if you can make them, like, stumble for, like, 2 seconds, that would be great. Like, when they step on your body, could you grab, like, their ankle?
Just slow them down for a second. And they did. What interesting thing happens right at this moment, though, is right outside near Pluto and Neptune, the first Dark Angel piece of the fleet arrive. They appear. And they begin launching themselves towards Terra. And everyone's aware of this. The Loyalists are aware of this. But importantly, Horus is aware of this. And the issue, again, is, even with the warp, no one knows how far out the Dark Angel Ultramans are. Because while Chaos is trying, it is doing all this stuff in the warp, it's not like there's a GPS and someone can say, they'll be here this much time.
They might be here in a couple hours. They might be here next week.
And so the arrival of the first Dark Angels is terrifying for Horus. Because now he has to kick it up to a 10, 11 or a 12. We got to go. We got to go. We got to go. And Rogel Dorn is getting this great little reinforcement of, it's working. They're here. But with that, that feels the perfect cliffhanger to freeze this and push us to next week. So quick little recap of where we are. Horus has, basically, Brad, he's what, a quarter mile from his final target?
Quarter mile from his, he's got sights on.
Yep.
He literally has, like, eyes on the final target. The defenders are bent but not broken, but they're...
There's a glimmer of hope coming their way.
They're getting a glimmer of hope that just happened because they're putting up the best defense, but kind of ridiculous odds after portals to chaos were opened on the planet.
Yeah, not great. That wasn't the best.
So, and they also have, again, distant British dad who's doing stuff, but he's not telling anybody he's doing stuff. So, like, they don't know why dad's just hasn't shown up and started slapping people.
Wrecked everything.
They're like, this is the most powerful guy in the galaxy, right? Why is he in the basement? Like, he's still working on his CB radio. Like, what the hell's happening? Like, I really want dad to help out.
Come on.
But they now have the second angriest of their brothers. And let's be honest, the lion is a vendetta for days.
Well, yeah, the vendetta guy's on his way, and it's just... He's not going to put up.
You've got the best tactical guy and the guy that wipes out civilizations on the way.
Yeah. So from there, we'll freeze until next week where we will conclude what happens again. Who's going to win? Is it Horus? Is it the Emperor? Is it a random dude named Eric? We won't know till next week. My bet's on Eric. Once again, thank you for listening. Please like and subscribe to us and tell your friends. Join our Discord. Join our Facebook page. I am John Barsotti. This is Brad Chester.
Scott.
Have a wonderful evening.